like everything in prison, everything spreads by word of mouth. And so rather quickly, what happened was the word got out, hey man, that yoga class is no joke. First of all, it's a good workout. And secondly, you'll get the best night's sleep you've ever had. And then over time, the emotional value and the mental health value builds.
Welcome to Guys Talking Yoga, a podcast created to help inspire men to consider the practice of yoga by sharing the stories and paths of other guys. I'm your host, Derek Vanderwalker, and today's guest is James Fox, the founder of the Prison Yoga Project, a nonprofit with the mission of bringing yoga and trauma-informed yoga techniques to incarcerated people across the U.S. and globally. In this conversation, James shares his own path, getting into yoga over 40 years ago to deal with, like a lot of us, back pain and stress and all that good stuff. Anyhow, along the way, he saw the merits of his yoga practice and decided to get into some teacher training as he wanted to start sharing the practice with others. After his training, he realized, maybe I should bring this to communities who don't have access. And in 2002, he entered San Quentin Prison in California and taught his first prison yoga class. After teaching yoga in San Quentin and a number of other prisons, he started the Prison Yoga Project in 2010. I love this conversation. I love what James is doing with his mission and his life. And I'm psyched to share not only this conversation, but also Bill Brown is executive director. And we're going to have one of their former incarcerated participants share his path and story for how yoga has helped him. Thanks for listening. Well, James Fox, it's great to have you on.
Thanks, Derek. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, no, I've been looking forward to this. So before we get into prison yoga and how you had the vision and the idea to create that 501c3, how did you get into yoga?
Yeah, so this kind of goes back 1987. I was a middle distance runner. That was one of my things. And I was living in San Francisco, and I used to run through Golden Gate Park back and forth and develop a back problem. Must have been a pinched nerve or something like that. And I had some friends, and I was complaining about my back, and they would say, well, you should try yoga. And my response was, yoga? I mean, why would I want to do yoga? I'm an athlete. What would yoga have anything to do with that? And I like to say that I had to suffer enough to finally say, all right, I'll go to a yoga class. So I went to a yoga class, and my very first yoga class, first of all, I had already been introduced to mindfulness meditation, seated meditation. And I very clearly remember that, first of all, I got physical relief from pain when I did the practice. But more than that, I realized, oh, this is meditation in motion, that you drop into a similar state that you drop into. And particularly for people who are active and people who have a connection with their body, this is a perfect way of dropping into that space. So I became intrigued, and I became very interested and started doing retreats and things like that. And that led to after many years, this would have been in 2000. So after maybe 12 years of really being a student of yoga and studying yoga and going into different disciplines of yoga, I decided that I wanted to become a teacher, not to teach in a yoga studio, but I wanted to bring yoga to people who weren't being exposed to yoga. And I live in a small community north of San Francisco. And at the time, there was a residential facility for boys at risk who'd been court ordered into this diversion program. So I went there first, and I said, I'd really like to expose the young men to yoga. And it took some convincing, but I finally had the opportunity to do that, started a program there. And I must have been on the right path, because very shortly after that, I got contacted by a nonprofit that was going into juvenile detention facilities in the Bay Area. So then I started going into a couple of juvenile halls. And then in 2002, I knew a therapist who was bringing a rehabilitation program into San Quentin, and he asked me, would I bring the yoga program in with him? So that was my introduction. And never in my wildest dreams, 21 years ago, did I think, oh, I'm going to create the Prison Yoga Project, and we're going to have in-prison yoga programs essentially all over the world.
Yeah. But
it was my belief in the value of what it was that yoga had to offer, particularly in terms of the mental, emotional, and physical well-being that it could afford.
Yep. And so what made you consider bringing yoga to that first community? You know, boys who were wayward boys who, like, why those guys?
Yeah, that's, well, it connected with my own background. I never spent time in juvenile hall or anything like that, but I grew up in Chicago, and I grew up around what a lot of young urban men grow up around. You know, I played a lot of sports, and I was around a fair amount of violence, male-on-male violence, which was acceptable in that time, still is acceptable. It's something that I came to know in the work that I've done over the years as the male role belief system is how you grow up and are kind of indoctrinated and conditioned into, well, this is how you think like a man, this is how you act like a man, so on and so forth, and can lead to a lot of suffering, a lot of personal suffering and suffering for others. So having experienced some of that as a youth, I realized if I had been exposed to something like yoga, maybe it would have made a difference. Now, there's a whole other issue about how do you introduce yoga to young men who are in a situation like that. And that that takes kind of a unique skill in and of itself. But I felt like I really had, I had experience that I could find a way in. And I was able to do that.
Mm-hmm. What is the unique skill, you think, to work with that kind of audience?
I think having experienced that kind of...
Being able to just empathize with the way they see the world and the things that they're dealing with on a daily basis.
Yeah, being able to empathize with that, being able to empathize with what it's like to be competitive, what it's like to, if you need to use violence, how, you know, using violence, the gamesmanship men play, that young men become conditioned in playing, dealing with the racial disparities, you know, when you live in an inner city and you come up against some of those racial issues, and some of the problems that that causes and so on and so forth. I had experience with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you initially see sort of the light bulbs go off with this community, or did it take a lot of time to really kind of win them over?
Particularly when I started working with youth in the residential facility, I saw the light bulbs go off pretty quickly. Harder in juvenile hall, although there were always a few young men who were interested. The build in San Quentin took a little bit longer. I like to say when I first walked into San Quentin with a yoga mat under my arm, and some of the guys in the prison on the yard would whistle and catcall at me, like, hey, what's that under your arm?
Right.
Not to mention how the staff greeted me. The five bravest guys in San Quentin showed up for my first yoga class. But like everything in prison, everything spreads by word of mouth. And so rather quickly, what happened was the word got out, hey, man, that yoga class is no joke. First of all, it's a good workout. And secondly, you'll get the best night's sleep you've ever had.
Yeah.
And then over time, the emotional value and the mental health value builds. And so it built pretty quickly, and my yoga classes became popular. I've always had wait lists for my classes there, and yeah, that's how it got going.
So what's the ideal class size in working with some of these prisons?
Well, it has to do with the space, and it also has to do with if you're a single teacher, and we call ourselves facilitators, by the way, rather than teachers, to get more on the level with the people that we're serving.
Meaning that you're not superior to them. You want
right,
to be sort of in the foxhole with them. I got you.
Exactly. Around 15 to 20. And a lot of that has to do with the space. You know, usually you don't have a large space, and you really, you don't want to be given the gymnasium because there are a lot of interruptions if you run a class mm-hmm. in a gymnasium. You want a smaller space, a more guarded space. Chapels are perfect in prisons. Classrooms, mm-hmm. if you can get a classroom. So around 15 to 20 is a good size.
Yep. So is it fair to say that just about every single individual in these communities has never been on a yoga mat?
Yeah, definitely. Yet definitely never been on a yoga mat. I mean, some of them, a very small percentage, have been introduced to yoga. Maybe they were at another prison and there was a guy doing yoga and they said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm doing, you know, some yoga, but they've never had any formal instruction.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wrote a book. I wrote a book in 2010 that we've sent out free of charge to any incarcerated person who writes to us. And since 2010, we've sent about 35,000 copies out to incarcerated wow. people all over the country. And it's an intro to yoga, an intro to yoga practices. It's been very useful.
What's the name of the book?
Yoga, A Path for Healing and Recovery. And you can find it on our website. It's not on Amazon or anything like that.
Gotcha. So we'll make sure we have the link in the show notes for this thing for that. Wow. So when you start out a class, like your stereotypical class, let's say you have 15 to 20 guys in there. Let's say you got a room that works. It's not too big, not too small. What's the typical class that you'll do? And do you have a standard way to help make it accessible so people can really get engaged with it and not feel too intimidated?
So first of all, we take what's called a trauma-informed approach, mm-hmm. understanding that the vast majority, if not all, of the people who are in the class come from backgrounds of trauma that's unresolved. And then they're in a traumatic environment. So they come with these hidden injuries, so to speak. So we're very careful about how we set the class up.
Yep.
We set the class up in circles, so nobody's behind you. And you've got, you know, that stability. The way, and particularly in a prison environment and the way that incarcerated people are treated is they're treated for the crime they committed that brought them to prison. Hmm. So they're constantly reminded of that. And our carceral system is a system of punishment. It's really not a system of rehabilitation. So whatever we can do in terms of the way that we relate with people and the way that we bring yoga to them to provide it as the opportunity for rehabilitation and healing, we do that. So I have a standard way that I introduce yoga. And I usually ask people, first of all, anybody here ever done yoga? And then I'll introduce yoga as yoga means union. Union of what? And somebody yells, mind, body, spirit. And I'll say, well, I can speak the mind and body, but I can't speak the spirit. That's your own business.
That's your work.
Your business, you know. Right. And particularly in a prison setting, you've got Christians, you've got Muslims, you've got Native yeah. Americans, you've got Jewish people, you've got people without any kind of religious affiliation. So we take a secular approach. Mm-hmm. And I introduce yoga as a union of mental, emotional, and physical, and that we all have a mental, emotional, and physical aspect to our being. Mm. And so what yoga is about is trying to provide a balance, trying to provide support for the mental, emotional, and physical aspects of ourselves. And how do we do that? Well, we do it in four different ways. We do it through mindful awareness, conscious breathing, movement, and deep relaxation. And so that becomes the introduction, and then we gear the class toward those practices in developing a practice. And also some content and guidelines, you know, they read things, and we have a workbook and so on and so forth. So, and we have about an 80 to 85% retention. Some guys drop out, like, this isn't for me. Or interestingly, you know, you think about a lot of guys who are really buffed in prison. Those are the guys who usually drop out first.
And why is that?
I think they're surprised by the stamina that yoga demands, that it's not just about muscular strength. And when you start, you know, going into not only muscles and bones, but joints and connective tissue, and holding poses for a longer period of time to find your breath and find impulse control, which is one of the things that we really target in the yoga practice, they have a hard time dealing with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys on the outside who are big time athletes who are used to pushing weights around really find that their body's going to start shaking at a certain point because their nervous system hasn't quite caught up.
Yes.
And the whole balance thing can be wildly frustrating. You know, if you just are just having the darnest time trying to stay on one foot, you're going to say, "Ah, screw it, I'm out of here. Isn't for guys anyhow," or whatever attitude they bring. Just going back a little bit about the trauma-informed techniques that you guys use, you also had mentioned how you make sure everyone sits in a circle so no one has anyone behind them. I got to imagine that these guys are like hyper-vigilant in prison all the time, and you always got to watch your back and make sure someone's not coming up behind you. I would think the opportunity to get into a yoga class and know that you're like in a safe space, you know, you can just let it go, has got to be somewhat cathartic, but also it probably takes many visits to really learn to relax. I mean, I know for me, you know, yoga has been a process. So I can't imagine in that community, that environment, you know, how hard it is to let go and really drop into this place.
I think it happens pretty quickly. And a lot of that has to do with the skill of the facilitator of creating that space. And, they're knowing this guy's in charge. I can trust him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to do the typical male competitive thing like put me in a pose to challenge me as to how long I can stay in the pose.
Yep.
And that's another thing about trauma-informed. You let people, even when you go in the pose, you let people know, okay, we're going to hold this pose for 10 breaths, or we're going to hold this pose for 5 breaths. So they know there's an end to this, and you stick to that. You stick right. to that.
Right.
And even in the middle of it, you know, you say, okay, stay with it if you're fighting it right now. And if you need to come out, come out. But see if you can find the strength to stay in it. And, you know, you build that connection with them. And then, again, the space becomes a place where they can come to their – I've got many guys say, that, you know, this is my favorite time of week. Because a lot of them go to other classes, cognitive behavioral classes and things like that, which is very important. You know, they have to go back and examine their past and
yep.
how did they become a criminal and what kind of criminal thinking developed, you know. But they find that they can explore a new aspect of themselves when they're practicing yoga.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, it reminds me of, I interviewed a friend named Larry, who's a lawyer. He's pretty much retired now, but he said when he got into yoga, he would go for 90 minutes during his lunch hour. And he said it was like a 90-minute vacation from my day, you know, and obviously much different experience than somebody who is on the inside in that environment versus somebody who whose prison is more of just sitting at a corporate desk dealing with that kind of stress. But I think the opportunity for a lot of guys is to see the yoga mat as a place of escape, freedom, relaxation. I mean, it's sort of like a, you know, 3x5 man cave. Just you can take it anywhere you want it. You just roll it out. And you might even just be lying on your back, just literally lying on your back before you've done anything and just checking in.
Yeah.
And you can just leave everything figuratively and mentally at the door.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the importance of making that bodily connection, you know, rather than living in your head all the time, which most of us do. I mean, that's the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
But and once again, this relates to trauma-informed, because the trauma therapists all talk about interoception, learning how to experience what's going on inside the body is the key to trauma healing.
Mm.
So being able to impart that. And then the other thing is what we always focus on, what is it that you learn from being in a yoga class that you can take out into your life to serve you in your life? So your life is you're incarcerated. You're in prison. This is your life. There's no way of getting around that.
Yeah.
Sure, you want to get out of here. You want to be home. But in the meantime, this is your life. This is what you have to deal with. So how can you improve your quality of life while you're incarcerated? And I mean, one of the things you can do is you can practice yoga, but the key is taking something that you learn from your yoga practice out into your life. So whether that's impulse control, whether that's using skills that you learn from yoga to develop calmer temperament, you know, some skills to deal with chronic pain. I mean, these are the top things that, you know, anybody, whether you're incarcerated or not, you know, you're dealing with chronic pain, you're dealing with stress, you're dealing with anxiety. Yep. These are the things that yoga can support you with.
Yep. And if it works for guys in the communities that you work with, it can work for anyone, right?
Well,
and
these guys are, so.
You know, so, have you seen some like stunning examples where you saw a guy who was skeptical and a doubter and over time has become someone who can't stop talking about what it's done for him, or at least embodies a change in a sense of, transcending the way they were before?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We actually have some videos of people who've gotten out and talk about what yoga meant to them while they were incarcerated and how it continues to influence their lives now that they're out. I'm thinking of one guy who actually went on and became a certified yoga teacher with our support. But when he was interviewed on the inside, he was a life sentence guy with the possibility of parole, and he was getting ready to go before the parole board. And one of the last things he said was, "I'll never stop doing yoga. I'll never stop doing yoga." And you could feel it. You could feel, that if a person has the opportunity to be in the program long enough, and by that I mean at least a year, they're going to be exposed to some of those benefits that's going to sink into them.
Yep. So how many prisons do you work with currently?
You know, we're in 17 states. Mm-hmm. California is our largest state, where we're in 7 of the state prisons and many county jails. The number of facilities, it keeps growing all the time, and we add another state, something like that. But it's reflective of having programs in 17 states.
Yeah. What's sort of the structure for your organization, and how do you guys scale and to be able to serve this massive community? That's probably one thing that I haven't really fully understood, and our listeners probably would appreciate, is like, how do you guys do what you do?
We've trained more than 3,000 people in our methodology. Mm-hmm. So it comes as a result of the trainings. We train people from all over the country. It's now an online training. So yoga teachers who are interested in doing this work engage in the online training. It's a 36-hour training. And then they may have a connection with a facility wherever they live. And then they have an opportunity to bring a program into the facility. And that's how it traditionally got started. I started doing those trainings in person in 2011. And that's how it initially got started. And then we provide support for them. Once they get the program going, we make sure they get yoga mats. We make sure they get materials. We make sure they get our books, our workbooks, so on and so forth, to support them with their programs. And we provide ongoing value-added webinars and things like that for all of our group of program facilitators.
So your yoga mats, do you work with a certain yoga company that helps give you guys yoga mats at a certain attractive cost to be able to support your mission?
Yeah, we get some yoga mats are donated to us, like Lululemon donates a certain quantity of yoga mats to us every year. Yep. And then we have privileges with Gaia, you know, where we get a special discount price for yoga materials and things like that. And Yeah, that's how we handle that.
And your workbooks, do you guys provide a hard copy or is there a digital copy? Or
we provide a hard copy to participants in the program.
And that's got to be a fair amount of cost as far as, like, do you guys get support, people who help sponsor the cost of your books?
Yeah, for grants and donations, support, you know, our materials and things like that.
Yep.
And then, you know, the money that we raise from our trainings and things like that. It's a whole combination of fee for services, revenues that we gain from training, and grants and private donations that all kind of come together to support us.
Yeah, and speaking of donations, you guys, I remember I was catching up with Bill offline when we were first talking about doing this series on Guys Talking Yoga. You guys have just kicked off a campaign to help raise money for Prison Yoga Project, right?
Yeah, we do an end of year campaign, which we're kicking off, and it's geared toward private donations.
Got it. And if people want to find out information, that stuff is on your website.
That's on our website, prisonyoga.org.
That's great. So, you had this idea 20 plus years ago to bring yoga to a certain community in need. And you knew that men needed help, particularly a certain age group of men, starting with, teenage boys. Now you've worked with a lot of older men, and I imagine some women also in these communities. How has this mission touched you as somebody who probably has had your own, like we all do, potholes in life, and you finding something in yoga that did something for you, and then knowing that you want to bring it to somebody else? I mean, as you look back as well as look forward, but if you look back and see what you've accomplished with Prison Yoga Project, what has it meant to you?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. Yeah. I had a strong desire, maybe I wasn't even conscious of it, but I had a strong desire to be of service. There was a heartfelt desire within me that wasn't being satisfied by other things that I did to make a living, to make money. That was, I want to be of service. And I don't know what that's going to look like. And then I kind of followed the bouncing ball. It was like, okay, well, what are some of the things you really love? And one thing led to the next. And I found that through my dedication and what yoga was giving back to me, that I was able to share with other people, that the rewards, the personal rewards of being of service through that endeavor has so far outpassed anything that I could have ever expected. It's really kept me going. I still go into San Quentin every week, and I walk out of there most of the time, which is this feeling of fulfillment of I've been able to drop into a situation and actually have my life touched and touch somebody else's life by just sharing this practice with them.
Yeah. I think for a lot of us, it'd be overwhelming to walk into one of those communities, let alone bringing something that most have never even explored or considered, and then to have the breakthroughs and the connections with so many people in those communities. Now, granted, like not everyone is sold after the first yoga class, but clearly the 80% sort of return rate that you have in your communities and your classes, I mean, it's a stunning impact. And I think it's also reminds us that, everyone is in their own prison in some way. There are some people who have more, let's say, material walls and firmer structures keeping them in their prison. But many of us live in a prison at some point and in some moments. And it's hard to put into somebody's brain exactly how rolling out a yoga mat gets you out of that state of mind or can help keep you out of that state of mind. But it can do that. And it seems so simple. And it seems overwhelming and so hard to believe when you got tight hamstrings and a tight back and you are skeptical, to find that initial series that you're doing of, let's say, sun salutations or whatever pose you're working on, that first experience, you're going to say, how does this get me to where I want to go? But it does. And you really can't put it into words. It's like sometimes the most important things are you can't explain in words. You just have to feel it and experience it. And I just think it's awesome what you guys have done, what you have done, what have you started with Prison Yoga, and what your team is doing, and the way you're helping to find a way to scale it through your trainings and share and make a further impact. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. So thank you for doing what you do. And thank you for joining us today. This has been awesome to connect. I've been looking forward to it.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it, Derek. Really appreciate it. Take care.